So we've been to see Reasons to be Cheerful at West Yorkshire Playhouse this evening, and this is a conversational review of the play, which we both thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, I was, to be honest, I was never a great fan of Ian Dury at the time. I liked him, but in the late 1979, early 1980s, I, as a feminist, I was really kind of disturbed by what I saw as the sexism of his lyrics, but I think that, a lot of that might have been about my kind of prurience at the time. It was also coloured by the fact that as a 23-year-old, I was asked to translate his lyrics for an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old French child.
Not an easy thing to do. I think I'd forgotten just how clever the lyrics are. I was singing along with every single song because I'd heard the album, particularly the first album, New Boots and Panties, so many times. They're just implanted in my head.
Yeah.
But hearing them again after a long gap, you actually sort of think, oh, those are really clever lyrics, actually.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of... There's all the wordplay. There's an awful lot of bawdiness.
Yes.
And it was very rude at the time. And so I'd probably be 16, 17 when that came out. And that was part of, you know, everyone at school. It was a big deal in sixth form at school because, you know, it was so rude. But it's bawdiness rather than smut or...
It struck me that it was kind of music hall humour, or
yes,
as you said earlier, it was kind of Shakespearean. It was a celebration of sex and sexuality rather than the kind of association of sex and with dirtiness, which is, I just thought was brilliant, because that also then... The other thing that was really important was that it talks about disabled people's right to a sex life.
Yes.
You know, and the fact that people with disabilities have a sexuality that actually, you know, society would rather pretend that they didn't have.
And I was young, but it was certainly the first time I'd ever heard that. I think Ian Dury broke down a lot of barriers with that.
Yes, I think he did. Yeah,
So I forgave him some of the... naughtier words and ideas because of that at the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's right to do that.
Yeah.
There was a play outside the play. The Youth Theatre did something before the play started.
Oh,
what did you think
of
that?
It was wonderful. Generation Snowflake. I thought, it was gorgeous, wasn't it? Because on the one hand, it's got all the, all the ever so slight naffness of youth theatre. Sorry.
Gosh.
But it was great because actually they had young people of all sorts of abilities and of evident and less evident disabilities performing. And the great thing about it was actually they were looking to assert equality and to challenge kind of notions of stereotypes and say, don't judge us. And I thought the thing that I really loved was at the end when they took Trump's thing about, these people as snowflakes because they're worried about disability or equality or being
climate
offended or whatever
or
climate
change.
That's their, to say that they're snowflakes, and they owned the idea of being snowflakes, and they basically said, yes, okay, we're snowflakes, but together snowflakes are an avalanche.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic, and I think we should take that as our a motto to live by, you know, together we're strong. Reminded me of, if we all spit together, we can drown the bastards.
And the whole thing about queer taking over the word and saying, yes, I am queer, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
We, yeah. The other thing I liked about that performance was the device of the almost the subtitles. It was Bob. If you've ever seen Bob Dylan's film of Subterranean Homesick Blues,
or Love Actually,
where he stands in the alley, they nicked it from Bob.
Yeah.
with the lyrics on a big sheet in front of him, and he throws each one away, and so the speeches that the various young people made were all written. So if you did have a hearing impairment, you could still know what was going on, but it was also part of the protest. And that whole way of doing accessible theatre was then done in the main show as well. I thought it was a very great effect.
I also, the other thing that struck me about Generation Snowflake was that when they did the thing with the cards, there was as well as a young woman who was reading them out, there was a young woman who obviously had kind of severely impeded speech, who was also speaking them. And we were hearing what she said and how she said it and how she felt about what was said, even if those weren't intelligible words. And that I thought was really powerful in terms of telling us that just because you don't understand or we don't understand what somebody is saying doesn't mean to say that there is not a thinking, feeling human being behind the sound that is trying to communicate with you. I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah. She couldn't enunciate any words, but the emotion was all there in the delivery.
Yes.
In the main play itself, in the theatre, there was a lot of signing, either done by other actors while the protagonist was speaking, or worked into the choreography, into the dance routine. So it was, or it became invisible.
It
really
did. It was brilliant, wasn't it? As a way of, you know, as somebody who's not familiar with sign language, or who kind of comes across sign language now and then, but doesn't really understand it or doesn't have it as a consistent other language. I just thought it was brilliant how they built it in. And it was, as you spoke, as they spoke, they signed. And so it was almost like, it was simultaneous translation. And, you know, I don't know what somebody who's hearing impaired actually would have thought about the quality of the signing, but it's certainly, for a hearing audience and a visual audience, it got across something about the need to communicate. I also thought, because at least one of the actors was hearing impaired, and it was very clear that in terms of when he was being spoken to, the actors were making eye contact and speaking to him directly, so that, you know, there was absolutely no doubt that he could lip read what they were saying. That was very clear all the way through. And yet at the same time, it was just integrated into the performance. It was part of the performance. It wasn't an artifice.
Yeah. And the other thing they did was, within the set, they had a projection screen which sometimes showed images to, which particularly for me, took me straight back to the 1970s, in terms of the supermarket brands and the types of cars they were driving and all the rest of it. But at the rest of the, when action was going on stage, they showed the script.
Yeah.
So if you were struggling to hear what people were saying, or you were hearing impaired yourself, you could follow the play. So again, it was just very, very accessible.
Yes.
And the audience, to me, seemed very, very mixed. And those of us more able-bodied and what have you, very accepting of the people who weren't. There was quite a lot of noise in the auditorium, but it wasn't a problem.
No, it wasn't intrusive. And actually, it wouldn't have mattered if it had been intrusive. I was really pleased that on the one hand, there were kind of the people who were sort of who had been around and young in 1979,
like us,
did remember.